Would like to talk to you about cardiovascular disease risk in the HIV population and what is emerging as a non-pharmacological intervention that we know works with healthy population. And I want to show you some data to indicate that it may also be an effective intervention in the HIV population. I'm just going to reach over here and do it this way. We know with the increased life expectancy that we see with the antiretroviral drugs that have come out over the last 10 or 15 years, there's also an increase in some other challenges that go along with that life expectancy. One of those that is emerging as a major issue for HIV-infected individuals on ART therapy is cardiovascular disease. This increase in cardiovascular disease risk is due to the virus itself. It's due to the antiretrovirals and the toxicities associated with those. And it's also due to lifestyle choices that are made by the people living with HIV/AIDS. As you can see on the screen, there are a number of risk factors that are accelerated or increased in the HIV population. They have typically a low aerobic work capacity, which may not mean much to you, but in the next few years, you're gonna see that with data coming out that aerobic capacity may be the best predictor of all-cause mortality and cardiovascular disease in the healthy population and also with HIV/AIDS. They typically have hypercholesterolemia, about 25% of them with ART therapy with protease inhibitors, and about the same amount with ART therapy with the NNRTIs as compared to about 8% hypercholesterolemia in those who are infected but aren't taking ART therapy. Body composition, most of us who've been working with the HIV population for years have looked at muscle wasting and the HIV-associated wasting disease. That's not what we see in the United States anymore. Only about 3% of the population has wasting disease now. What we're seeing is over 60% are either overweight or obese and are having the same kind of difficulties that the quote-unquote healthy population who's overweight and obese are having. They have impaired glucose tolerance, about 35% of the people living with HIV as compared to about 5% in the U.S. of uninfected individuals, and they have a threefold higher incidence of diabetes as compared to the healthy population. So you can see there are some major risk factors that are increased in the HIV-infected population that we know lead to cardiovascular disease over long periods of time. Typically what we see for a healthy population, 60 and 70-year-olds, we're seeing in 30 and 40-year-olds who have HIV and are taking the antiretrovirals. As I said, aerobic capacity is becoming an accepted marker of cardiovascular disease risk. In 33 studies of non-infected individuals with 102,000 participants, what we see is that low cardiorespiratory or aerobic capacity has about a 70% higher risk of all-cause mortality and over 50% higher risk for cardiovascular disease. And for every unit increase in cardiorespiratory fitness, you see about a 13% decrease in risk of all-cause mortality and about a 15% decrease in risk of cardiovascular disease. Now, we don't know whether this is also true in HIV, but we're studying that now. If you look at the clinical trials with HIV-infected people over the last 20 years, what you see is that if 100% is the age-predicted aerobic capacity, and 75%, which is the little blue dotted line, is the threshold for functional aerobic impairment or a clinical reduction in aerobic capacity, what you can see with the black squares is where the clinical trials show aerobic capacity for the HIV population. So you can see out of the 6 trials that have been done in the last 20 years, only 2 make it over the functional aerobic impairment level, and most of them are below. And also what you see is that the highest clinical trial in terms of aerobic capacity was only about 85% of their age-predicted max. So this is a serious problem in the HIV population. This is a study that we completed in the last couple of years showing with 100 individuals HIV-infected, all on ART therapy, randomly assigned to either 6 weeks of 2 sessions of moderate aerobic intensity, or moderate intensity aerobic activity. So we're talking about half of what the Surgeon General is recommending for the healthy population. You've got the control group, which is C, and the training group, which is T. You can see that both of them at the beginning of the 6-week period at the pre-training stage were right around the poor level of aerobic capacity. The controls didn't statistically go down, but certainly had a trend towards actually decreasing over the 6 weeks. But if you look at the train group, and again, this is two sessions of 30 minutes of aerobic activity, we saw a 22% increase in aerobic capacity in 6 weeks, which is almost unheard of, and it's probably because they were so detrained to start with. Excuse me. But again, a 22% increase in 6 weeks of moderate intensity activity. If you look at the same group with body composition, what you see on the left side of the screen is lean tissue mass. What we did was we took the groups and we divided them. And this is only the training group. I'm not showing the control group because there were no differences in the control group. We split them by the median body fat percent, which was 20%. And so this is an increase in the individuals who had below 20% body fat, an increase in lean tissue mass. And of course, as you probably know, lean tissue mass is a good marker of mortality or decreased risk of mortality. And even with the group that was above 20% body fat, you can see that there was a significant increase in lean tissue mass. On the right side of the screen, this was body fat percent. And as I said before, over 60% of HIV-infected people in the U.S. now are either overweight or obese. With 6 weeks, basically 1 hour a week of aerobic activity, you can see that the people who were below 20% body fat actually gained a little bit. But look, there was a significant decrease in body fat for those who were above 20% body fat range. So this typically shows what we would consider in the exercise world as a muscle-sparing phenomenon. And lastly, if you look at blood chemistry, again, a marker of cardiovascular disease risk, in the population we studied serum LDL levels, low-density lipoprotein cholesterol, there was a significant decrease. It wasn't down to where we were looking for, but again, this was just 6 weeks of activity. We don't know what happens with 6 months or a year, even 2 years of activity. Serum triglycerides went from 155 down to 110, which is a healthy range for triglycerides. And I added perceived stress in because, and this is data that's hot off the press, we've just analyzed this data, and what we showed was that if you use a perceived stress scale where less than 12 would be considered a safe stress level for individuals, they started off at 13, which was a clinical level, and in 6 weeks they were down to about 10.5. Again, all of these are the exercise group because the control groups didn't change significantly. I always like to say that getting down below 10 is better than down below 12. We almost made it down to what I would consider to be a non-clinical level of stress. Conclusions from these studies are that moderate levels of physical activity by people living with HIV can in a short period of time reduce established risk factors for cardiovascular disease. We showed an increased respiratory fitness level, which may be the best marker of cardiovascular disease risk. We reduced body fat, increased muscle mass, reduced blood lipids, and reduced reported perceived stress levels. Again, all in 6 weeks with half the Surgeon General's recommendation for aerobic activity for Americans. Thank you.
Is there any questions this time?
Yes.
These are adults. These were adults. There haven't been any studies done on children.